Tony, welcome, bro.
Luke, what is up, man?
Very rarely am I met with that much energy on my own podcast. So I appreciate that. We'll keep that same energy throughout the whole conversation today.
Oh, the whole time, baby.
Sure. I love you because you talk fast, and I appreciate that because we can talk about more things when we talk about fast. Yeah. I find that when I have good, methodical, like really thought-provoking conversations, all things that we'll have today, but I can be very long drawn out sometimes as well. But when the guest is coming on, it's like, okay, we cool. We talk about one or two things for the whole podcast. And I feel like today we'll be able to hit on a lot of different things and have a lot of side tangents, but also execute on this like notes list that I sent you prior to this podcast today. So welcome, man. I'm appreciative that you spent some time with me today.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for acknowledging that I talk fast, because I listen to a lot of podcasts at 2x speed. And my mom, sometimes she lives with us, and she comes out and she's like, "You're going to start talking that way." So I guess I'm talking like a 2x podcaster. So hopefully when someone listens to this, if they listen to it at 2x, it's not too fast.
Oh my gosh. Maybe 1.2 speed will be enough.
The perfect.
Yeah. I feel like you remind me a lot of myself in certain ways, where fairly type A, likes to add a lot of context and talk about things and get super passionate about certain topics that you really enjoy talking about or you know a lot about. And I'm wondering if it was always that way. I'm wondering, just do your little podcast intro, but like, when you became a dietitian, was that something you always gravitated towards to, or is that something that you found your voice later on after you kind of started to learn and implement and change your own life and shit, all that stuff? Like, tell me about that.
Luke, it took time finding my own voice, who I am. I'm still even trying to be in that space. I've been working with a lot of brands more recently, and it's helped me understand like who my voice is and who my trialing reach out to. Because as we both know, we want to help as many people as possible. However, not everyone's going to want to jive with us. There's 8 billion people on this planet. Not all 8 billion want to work with us because they just don't like our style, and that's okay, right? We want to work with the people that want to change, that want to improve themselves and understand where we're coming from. So finding my own voice definitely took time. I mean, as you went through the internship, right, being one of the unicorns in dietetics, if you're listening to this podcast, you have to understand less than 4% of dietitians are guys. This is a mainly female-run profession, right? So being a guy, I could tell you I got a lot of slack, because I remember I'd ask for help in class and I'd get the response of, "No, you're a guy. You're going to get into an internship regardless of what your grades are." And it's like, what? No, I still have to work hard. If anything, I have to work harder. Where in most other fields, it's typically the women that have to work harder because they feel like they're trying to compensate being in a male-run field. So trying to find my own voice in that nature, right? And then making sure that I'm putting the right foot first. And even during my internship, I remember two things that really stuck out to me about finding my own voice. And it was one, going to ask for charts. So a lot of the dietitians struggled to get charts because they were female, they were in the hospital, and the doctors thought they were a nurse. So they wouldn't give them the charts because that was, you know, they were more important, for lack of better words. Not my words, not my thoughts, just how it came out. But I would go on the floor and I'd be like, "Hey, can I get the chart?" They'd give it to me in an instant because they thought I was a doctor. Then when they saw I was a dietitian, you would see them be floored because they'd be like, "Oh man, I needed that chart." But now they've given it to me, it's a little too late. And then the second thing that happened, as you know, in being a dietitian, we have to do food service. And there was a food service worker that was not doing his job, and he got in my face. Like, he got really upset at me, and I had to calm him down, but I also stood my ground, right? And it was interesting because I remember bringing this up to the preceptor. The preceptor's like, "Oh my God, like, what? What do you mean? Like, what? Huh?" Like, they were like almost scared or worried that I even brought that up. And it's like, no, we have to stand our ground, right? I'm not saying we have to yell at people. That's not going to bring anything effective out of this conversation, but don't back down. Like, you have a voice. There's a reason why we're doing this, and we need to empower our community and who we are, right? So finding my voice took time, and working with athletes, right? When I worked at the University of Florida, I had mentors. I was learning from the dietitians. So I was really just consuming what they were saying and seeing how they spoke with athletes, right? So as you're talking about talking fast, athletes don't want to be spoken to. They want to be spoken with. And with that, they don't have time to listen to your information. They're already worrying about so many other things. And I state that because when I worked at the University of Florida, or when I worked with the pros in pro baseball, I had to be ready to give a talk about hydration, whether I had 1 minute or an hour. And a prime example, I remember, It was my first spring training, and my director's like, "Hey, it's a rain day. You got to talk to the guys for an hour about hydration." And I was like, "Oh shit. Here we go, baby." Because most of the time I got like a minute, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 15 minutes would be great, but I got a whole hour and I had to fill it to keep their attention. So I was talking about the importance of hydration, how we can do it in the clubhouse. Not only that, how do we actually implement it for them? So really being versatile, adaptable, flexible, but giving people the science when they need it, and then also giving them that short one sentence that they can take with them, that sticky note message. And my favorite one is always hydrate or dihydrate, as you may know. So that's one thing I'm very passionate about. So in regards to finding my voice, how I came here, I mean, it's such a long journey, Luke, to be honest with you. And I kind of like jumped around on it. However, just it really started when I was 13 years old, man. I weighed about 252 pounds. I went to go see a urologist with my mom. I had gynecomastia, which is just man boobs. And I was made fun of. And I didn't want to be made fun of anymore. It's that uncomfortable feeling, right? Getting made fun of, being bullied. And I wanted to lose weight. It wasn't until the end of high school where I was an offensive lineman in football. I lost the weight because a buddy of mine gave me a meal plan, gave me a workout plan, felt great. Luke, I went to college and beer, pizza, tacos, all that stuff tasted way better than any meal plan I had followed. So I yo-yoed back on the weight. I listened to all the gym bros. Instagram was just coming up. So most of the stuff I heard was either from gym bros or from magazines like Men's Health, Men's Journal. And it was take this protein powder, take this pre-workout. Heck, my girlfriend, who's now my wife, had this skinny ballerina girl tea. And it said help women in weight loss. And I was like, why is this only working women? Well, it was just a laxative. It had nothing to do with women or men. It was just a laxative. And it didn't help me at all. I did the hydroxy cuts, all the things, because I thought that's what I needed, right? And as we know, with ergogenic aids or supplements, especially fat burners, most fat burners burn zero or up to the amount of calories as a Hershey's Kiss. So don't waste your money on them. Short story. but, you know, I tried all those things. And it wasn't until I had just finished my degree in biology and chemistry, I broke my foot dancing because I was doing two-a-days. So if you're an athlete, you know, that's two workouts a day. And I was eating under 1,500 calories. And if you're a female or woman listening to this, that's under 1,200 calories equivalent for you. For guys, 1,500 is nothing. So I was underfueling. I had weak bones and I broke my foot dancing. And the first thought that came to my head when I stood up that next morning was, how am I going to work out? And I knew I had a disordered relationship, not only with eating, but also with working out. So from there, I went to an open house with my wife, and it was about nutrition. And Luke, I'm sure you know this, but I didn't know there was a degree in nutrition. When I showed up, I thought you just had to work at a gym and you had a weekend certificate. That's all you needed. You knew everything about nutrition. I don't know how many times I hear a trainer talk about glutamine. I want to smack him in the face because that's not what that person needs. However, that's what I thought prior to getting this degree in nutrition. And once I sat for my first class, Luke, I knew that's exactly where I wanted to be. I loved it. I knew that's what I wanted to. And I was so excited because I thought they were going to tell me cut out sugar, carbs are the devil, hyper-focus on protein and all these other things, which was actually a big game changer shift for me personally, because when I worked with athletes, I remember seeing swimmers, Olympic swimmers that I worked with at Florida, eat Froyo every night at our Froyo machine. And I'm like, what are you doing eating Froyo? In my head, I wouldn't call them out on this because I understood that food is fuel and they would use it to perform at their best. Now, to say there weren't people that had disordered eating or eating disorders would be incorrect. There was that in sports. However, those that were successful understood how to use that food for their fuel source. So that was the first thing that broke it for me. I was like, whoa, this can actually happen. And the other reason I love working with athletes and high performers and why I got in that field was they have a bigger voice, right? If I can help one person. So for example, I've worked for a CEO, worked with a CEO of a company, and he came to me because he couldn't hold his golf club because he was cramping so badly. So hydrate or dihydrate, we worked on it. After working together for a month, he bought water bottles, personalized water bottles for his whole company. That's the kind of impact I'm personally looking for as a dietitian, to help people that are going to make the biggest impact. So people that have the biggest voices that really want to push the right things, because there's so much misinformation out there. So after working with them, I worked with the Toronto Blue Jays baseball team. Loved working in baseball because both of my parents are from Dominican Republic. And as you may know, a lot of baseball players are Dominican. And it was a huge help, not only being able to speak Spanish, but knowing the culture. So it was really great to do that. And now I've been in my own private practice for 6 years and nutrition for performance, and worked with all kinds of athletes, C-suites, leaders, people that just want to improve their nutrition, because the amount of nutrition misinformation out there is like an alphabet soup. And I help make a clear sentence out of it.
Hell yeah, all the above, dude. Thank you for all that.
Let me take a sip of water. Hydrate or dihydrate.
Yeah, bro, you need to chill out for a second. I wrote down a shit ton of notes here. A couple of them. Voices are a big one, because I think we all have our own voice and we all have our own opinions. And especially as like professionals. And I'm not even talking about dietetics professionals, but CEOs and teachers and professors and lawyers and, you know, like the blue collar workers out there. Like, we all have a voice, right? And I find it's so fascinating because people don't use their voice maybe as much. And maybe it's because it's a learned trade, or it's just how they grew up, or it's just how they fit in their family dynamic, or how they fit in their work dynamic. Dietitians, it's interesting though, because you have to find your voice and you almost have to force your voice in a lot of certain situations. And I know a lot of people can resonate with that too. Your example of just like being a dietetic intern, or being through, you're going through school, or even starting your career. And it's like, hey, bro, you have 1 minute or 2 minutes to talk to these dudes about what they need to drink tonight before our game tomorrow. It's like always being ready, always building the confidence to actually be able to step into the, you know, opportunity that is presented to you and try to excel. Like, you're not going to do it every time, but it's that trial and error. And it's that not give up kind of mentality that you just keep putting yourself in uncomfortable positions. And I remember, like, for me being a similar, similar story as you, or being one of like four guys in our whole dietetics program at the university I went to, who pursued nutrition and dietetics. Right. But, I remember some similar situations where it was just like, holy shit, I'm the only guy, I'm the token dude in the whole class or in our group project. And like, I was the one that was responsible for delivering the presentation, right? Or when when I got to my internship and I was working under other dietitians, and you realize it's like, oh damn, I gotta be on my toes, and I gotta know when to speak and how to speak when we're in the ICU rounds and the doctor's like, what are we doing for tube feed? Or what is the protein recommendations? Or what nutrition interventions are we doing? Same thing when I got my first job as well. Like, there's a lot of pressure being a dietitian and not having interns, or you're not being an intern under, you know, dietitians where you're being supervised. But we had this LTAC community at the top floor, and they only did paper charting. LTAC, for the people who don't know, is like this long-term kind of acute care rehab, people with like necrosis or wounds, or, you know, wound vacs and diabetic ketoacidosis, people who maybe had some orthopedic surgeries, trouble healing, just things that people needed to be in a hospital, supervised, hooked up to shit, checked on consistently before they got to go home or to a nursing facility. But I remember going up there and getting the paper charts like yourself and being like, where is this paper chart? Because I only worked a couple of days at the hospital. I had another job, and it was like, where is this chart? Because I need it and I need to do my assessment right now. And again, people misinterpreted me for like a physician's assistant or a PT or some of the other OTs and, you know, other people that were up there. And when they found out I was a dietitian, it was almost like, it's almost like we got a little bit more respect, you know, because we were figuring out how to ask for what we needed. But long story short, I found it very interesting because I found my voice too from a lot of practice, a lot of clinical experience. And now being in the online space where you have your own platform, you have Instagram, you have podcasts, you have these conversations, we can kind of come into our own, but we're not born that way. And it's very difficult sometimes to put yourself out of these, you know, comfort zones that we kind of find ourselves in, but that's how we grow. And that's how we become communicative, or successful communicators and educators in this health space that I think needs it more than ever. So I find that fascinating. I resonated a shit ton with that story, but everyone has their voice and their own experience. And I just want people to appreciate the fact that you're not alone. If you feel like you have to come into your voice and you feel like you're a little unique or different, we're all fucking weird at the end of the day. So you're not unique in that sense. Oh man, I love that, dude. You talked about a few things here. I want to shuffle into our first question for you. And you mentioned working with high level athletes, worked in professional baseball. Where are you at right now? Do you have a day job outside of your coaching business? Or are you just exclusively doing online coaching right now?
Just all online coaching.
Love it. Love it. So you've had a lot of experience with different athletes in different populations, different types of athletes or different sports. There's a lot of overlap between sports. There's obviously nuances, obviously different considerations, different recommendations that we might give to an ultra endurance athlete, to a high level sprinter or a football player or team sport athlete. So it's hard because we're not going to talk about every sport here, but in particular, I think we maybe shift this more towards team sport athletes just because, you know, most people are participating in that. And individual athletes also are very similar in the sense where we have to fuel and take care of our basics. And we talk about supplements. It's like, it's not unique to just one certain population here, but you brought up the word ergogenic aids and supplements. And I want to talk about that. But before we do, I want to throw a question your way of like, when it comes to an athlete, when you have somebody that comes to you, walks through your door, or in the past, when they're, you know, they're trying to appreciate What does my lifestyle, my nutrition, my hydration, like what do all of these things and how do they contribute to my performance, my recovery, my ability to adapt to the stimuluses I'm trying to recover from, my success in my sport or whatever the case may be? Somebody's coming to you. What are the fundamentals, in your opinion, that you think are the most important to get kind of this framework down and done consistently before we start talking about a lot of the other fun, nuanced stuff that a lot of people want to jump to in the first place? I'm curious, just in your experience and your practice today, what some of those things are, if you had to say.
Absolutely. So just to make sure I understand you correctly, like where do supplements fall? And if it would it be the first thing to think about, or is it the last thing to think about?
Correct.
Is that correct? Man, how many times has someone come up to you, whether they're an athlete or a leader of a company or even your average gym goer, and the first thing is like, I worked with a personal trainer in the past. They gave me a list of supplements and my meal plan, and this was successful. And I'm always like, if it was successful, you wouldn't be here. Number one. Number two, that list of supplements is absolute trash. That is the last thing you need to worry about. And we're going to talk about right now how I like to say supplements are like donuts. And I love donuts, Luke. Where's your do you where's your favorite donut spot? Tell me.
We got a spot here called Doughboy Donuts and then an OG jelly donut. It's not all jelly donuts, but open 24 hours. Just bring back high school memories for me. Go at midnight, just get the chocolate bar and the cinnamon twist
Oh.
and look good. Can't
Man, now I'm
adore
gonna have to go get donuts after this.
it. Same. Same.
So I always tell people like I love donuts, right? And it's probably a food that we're told not to eat and be scared of, but this is how it's like supplements and how it's like how we actually eat. So in order to make a donut, we have to have the right ingredients. Do we have flour? Do we have eggs? Do we have sugar? Well, in our body, that's like us having the right macronutrients and the right energy. Are we getting enough energy? Are we getting enough calories? Because as most athletes that I've seen, most of them underfuel or don't eat enough, right? So that means you don't even have enough ingredients to make a donut. So let's start there. You don't have enough ingredients. All right. How much of each ingredient do you actually have? Well, let's say you have one egg, 2 pounds of flour, and a tablespoon of sugar, which is not a lot. You don't need to know much math or size, but you don't have the right portions of everything. So you go ahead and you still make that donut. That's like someone who does a very low carb diet, a high fat, moderate protein diet, even though they think they're doing a high protein diet. Well, your body does something called gluconeogenesis. Very sciencey word, just stands for gluco means carb, neo means new, genesis means creation of a new carb. So what happens is if you eat a very high protein diet, what your body's going to do is actually going to convert that protein into carbs. So you're wasting your time. You could have just eaten the carbs. But anyways, so there we go. So now we have this donut. We don't even have enough of the right ingredients. We mix these ingredients together. Then we decide how do we cook it? So that's where that meal timing comes in. Is it overcooked? Is it undercooked? I don't know about you, but if I've ever had a soggy donut, which I haven't, knock on wood, probably not good. A burnt donut, probably not good either. And it doesn't even have the right ingredients. Then all of a sudden, we throw a bunch of sprinkles on it. That donut's still gonna be trash. Well, that's what most people do. They just throw sprinkles on their donuts. The sprinkles are the supplements. They make a difference of anywhere between 1 to 5%. And that's if you're an elite athlete, right? If you're doing everything else right. So what do I mean by that? What is everything else? Right. So we spoke about energy balance. So eating enough carbohydrates, eating enough protein, eating enough fat. So having enough of those calories, having enough of those macronutrients. And then not only are you having enough of each, then you're timing it out. So having protein every 3 to 4 hours. Are you having a balanced meal? What are you doing pre-workout? What are you doing post-workout? Once you have all that down, then we could talk about supplements. And one thing I'd even talk about is the foundational thing to this whole quote unquote pyramid. And that is sleep. I don't know how many athletes, especially when I was working in pro sports, they'd stay up playing Fortnite, Roblox, whatever, because the game is over. They wanted to cool down. And they would sleep less than 7 hours a night. And it's been shown if you sleep less than 7 hours a night, you increase your injury risk by 70%. And I don't know about you, but being an athlete, you don't want to get injured. You want to stay as healthy as possible, as long as possible, so you can play as much as possible. So if you're just you're doing poor sleep because you're having a ton of energy drinks and staying up late on Fortnite or TikTok or whatever. That's the first thing. Two, you decide to underfuel. Three, you decide to listen to internet advice and go low carb. Four, you decide to take this pre-workout because you heard it's going to give you that pump you need. Well, you're going to injure yourself. You're going to hurt yourself and you're going to put yourself on the bench versus on the field. And that's where I tell people is the biggest mistakes I see. They do this perfect storm because then they hear all these podcasts that say they should be fasting or doing the greens powder or trying this new supplement that's going to help boost their testosterone. It's like, are you actually doing the foundational things? And I don't know how many people that I've worked with, athletes, leaders of companies, average gym goers that are ignoring everything else and still trying to find that magical supplement.
I love the donut analogy. I'm going to steal that one day.
Steal it, baby. Steal it. Take it.
I've been able to identify more with something in my life, though. And I think people can sit here and kind of nod their head in agreement with like, oh, that all makes sense. You know, but when you go into the donut shop, like, what do you see? You see a finished product. You know what it tastes like on the inside, but you're assuming it tastes good. But the sprinkles catch your attention, or the crumbled Oreos, or the maple drizzle, or the crumbled cinnamon sugar on top of these things. And you're like, oh yeah, this fancy coat on the outside is the thing I see. It's the thing I'm exposed to a lot. It's the thing that sells the product, but it's also the thing that we think makes everything else come into place, when in reality, we're nothing without that base, right? Like, no one's going to go in there. There's just a pile of sprinkles on one of the mats. They're like, oh, you want a handful of sprinkles? Like, no one's getting right mind to take that, right? So I think that's phenomenal. And I'd love your hierarchy of importance, or just these like fundamentals here. And I'm happy you bring up sleep, because I think that's one of the most neglected just inputs when it comes to optimal performance. You mentioned injury prevention. We talk about adaptations. We talk about all of these things that we get from our training. Man, if we're not sleeping, that is the thing that can throw a wrench into literally everything that we're talking about. So I'm happy you bring that up. And I empathize with athletes today, because I was an athlete in high school and I still play sports and, you know, I still move my body and love playing basketball and all that stuff. But when you're a high level athlete and you're competing at the highest level, whether it's in your AAU team or in high school, and you're trying to make the varsity team, or you're trying to make a D1 scholarship, or you're training to go to the Olympic trials in 2028 or whatever, it's like, sleep is the thing that is likely going to help you get you closer to where you want to be and what you've been eating and training and doing all these things so hard for. But when that's not there, it's crazy how quickly everything can kind of crumble after that. And it's something that can be an accumulated effect. It's not like you have one bad sleep tonight and all of a sudden all your progress is gone this last week. It's more of, what are your habits? What are your behaviors? What are the things that are influencing the quality of your sleep? And is that going to be a net positive or negative in your life? And a lot of people sitting here listening to this conversation, you mentioned TikTok, Snapchat, you know, playing video games and Fortnite and playing the Call of Duty or whatever, or binge watching White Lotus or whatever show is super popular right now. It's like, you're going to bed at midnight and getting up for 6, you know, 7 a.m. for practice the next morning. Like, that is absolutely crippling to people, even though they might not feel it all the time. And you can just take enough caffeine to mask that effect in the morning and feel like you're still getting a good workout in. But I think that sleep is the one thing that is the most neglected that I've seen personally. So I'm happy you bring that up. And while we're on that, what are some things on how to create a nighttime ritual, or how do you get better quality sleep, or how we can start to improve on those behaviors? Say somebody's here 6, 7, 7.5 hours of sleep every night, and they're trying to get to 8, 9, or maybe more sometimes. Like, what are some steps or things that you found success in when working with your clients or the people you've had, you know, experience working with?
And even taking this a step back, if I may, Luke, yep. I remember when I was giving talks, and my favorite is talking to a group of youth athletes, especially boys that play team sports. And I say, who here wants to boost their testosterone? Most of them be like, ooh, hands up. And I'm like, you want to know what the best ergogenic or supplement you can do? They're like, yes, tell me, like foaming at the mouth. And I'm like, get sleep. Oh, come on, man. Tell me what supplement to take. It's like, no, sleep. Sleep, if you're looking for any performance enhancer, it is not the caffeine, even though it is a performance enhancer. It's the sleep you get. And not only that, when I talk to parents, right? I'm a parent. I have 2 kids, very young, 4.5 and 1.5. If I don't get my sleep, I'm grumpy. My wife's grumpy. We're all grumpy. And the thing is, like, we as people who don't get enough sleep, that's what's going to cause us to hurt ourselves. So how do we create a sleep routine? Everyone is different. But one thing that's always stuck with me that I found so fascinating is that when we were kids, our parents made us do a sleep routine. You brush your teeth, you read a book, whatever it may be. So in the case of my kids, they have milk. We read 3 books. We brush their teeth, put out lights, go to bed. That is their bedtime routine. What most people do, most athletes, they stare at their phone until God knows when. They yawn. They might be playing a game, again, going back to TikTok, and that's it. They fall asleep. They're like, oh, you know what? It's 1 a.m. I should go to sleep. So they see a time, and they might still stay up. because they have the fear of missing out on something, right? And even parents, so parents put their kids to bed, then they turn on a TV show because they want to watch The White Lotus. They've been seeing it all over social media, what everyone's talking about. So now instead of going to bed like at 9, they're going to bed at 11 because now they had to catch up on another show too. And they're wondering why they're not able to have that body composition change. They don't understand, but I've been eating the right way. I've been working out the right way, right? But for every hour we don't sleep, our body actually wants 200 to 300 more calories because it needs that energy. And typically we want something that's salty, something that is fatty, or something that is sugary. Why? Our body wants the most bang for the buck. So it knows that if we get something that has sugar, salt, or fat, it's going to get that 200 to 300 calories very easily. And we overeat it while watching TV or watching TikTok or playing a game because we're mindlessly consuming not only the content, but the food. So how do we create a sleep routine? I always tell people, what's easiest for you? What can you actually do that will make you feel like it's impact? So one of the things I've heard most recently is even if you just get 5 minutes of more sleep a night, right? 5 times 7 is 35 minutes. That's a huge game changer for anyone. So even if you change your bedtime routine by 5 minutes a night once a week, after 2 weeks, that's an hour, right? So whatever your sleep routine is, even if you just cut it off by 5 minutes, so setting a sleep alarm is one thing. The other thing I love is this sleep. It's the 10-3-2-1 rule. 10 hours before bed, avoid caffeine. So no pre-workout. If you have a night game, I would highly avoid caffeine unless it is like your Super Bowl, unless it is your playoffs and you have time to recover. You can catch up on sleep, right? So 10 hours before bed. 3 hours before bed, stop having any food. And if you drink alcohol, if you're of age, stop that. Right? 3 hours before, because you need your stomach to settle so you're able to sleep. Now, with that one, I'll put a little caveat, because with athletes, someone who has competitions the next day, I found athletes that can eat 30 minutes before bed, an hour before bed, and not be bothered at all with their sleep. However, a good rule of thumb is 3, depending on what your weight goals are. Like if you're looking to someone to gain weight, it could be helpful to have a meal before bed. However, that's a whole different story. 2, finish any other work or stimulating activities you're doing 2 hours before bed. And then 1 hour before bed, turn off those screens, run away from them, put them away, right? Those blue lights that we have are waking us up. They're keeping us up at night. They're telling our melatonin, which is our hormone to go to sleep, to keep, to go back. Don't do anything. Keep up our cortisol, our stress hormone. So those blue lights tell melatonin, our sleepy hormone, stay away. So that's why when you're watching your phone, you're watching TV, you may not feel that tiredness. Right? And talking about melatonin, talking about supplements, most sleep doctors say stay away from melatonin. There was a study done. They looked at 20 different melatonins. Out of those 20 melatonins, I believe it was like negative 123% and up to 835% of what was actual dosage. So what's that mean? It said it would be 5 milligrams, but it might be as little as 1, might be all the way as 20. And we're seeing a lot of kids go to the ER because they're overdosing on melatonin. And most sleep doctors say stay away from melatonin. You don't want to take it. Right? Because it's actually not helpful, because when we stop producing it internally, we need more and more and more from these exogenous or from sources that we get from the store. And we want to avoid that because it actually doesn't help us have that restful sleep. Right? So when it comes to setting up a sleep routine, that 10-3-2-1 rule is very helpful. And if you still have struggling with that, I always say try to take a hot shower before bed. So that way, when you get into that cool temperature, anything under 68, you want to have blackout curtains if you can, as dark as possible. Anything like that, those would be things that could be very helpful to set yourself up for success in regards to a sleep routine.
Very well said. Very thorough as well, too. And I know a lot of people can appreciate that. And I love this 10-3-2-1 rule because I think it's very practical. And I think a lot of people can kind of individualize it to themselves, even though there's a lot of general, just general recommendations that people can kind of adhere to. But, you know, caffeine consumption looks different for everybody. Screen time, schedules, eating patterns, eating times, practicality of when they have food, you know, what their work looks like the next day. Like there's all these justifications where, oh yeah, that wouldn't work for me. But when you realize that like making time for that could actually make for higher productivity and make for better performance and make for a easier wake up at the next morning, like those are trade-offs that you have to acknowledge are likely worth it to you instead of just trying to squeeze every ounce of thing or just trying to neglect that part of your routine and expect everything else to fall into place at the end of the day too. So I think that's really helpful. The caffeine one, I can't emphasize enough as well. I find that people who do any caffeine in the afternoon, those are the people that tell me they sleep decently the night, you know, at night, that need that caffeine in the morning, and then that need that extra 2, 3, 4 p.m. energy drink or pre-workout before their workout routine. Like, those are the same people that are constantly stuck in this negative feedback loop. And, you know, one of the things I'll say to people is like, hey, if we look at like the actual half-life of caffeine, right? Like, you take a dose of coffee or caffeine, like 4 to 6 hours, half of that caffeine that you drink from that drink is still in your system. That 10 hours, 10 to up to 12 hours is how long it takes for all of that caffeine to be, you know, out of your system. So if you have somebody sitting here at 4 p.m. taking their 300 milligram pre-workout supplement and going and doing a 60-minute hypertrophy session, it's like, ah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, baby.
We got to be rethinking what we're doing here. But caffeine limiting in the afternoon or completely cutting it off after 12, 1, 2 p.m., I find is such a helpful recommendation, more than a lot of these, you know, that we're talking about. Because once we do that, everything else can also feel a little bit more simple too. The food one is very interesting. I've experimented a lot with that as well, but we do see thermogenesis, or just like body temperature and, you know, your body focusing its attention on digestion and, you know, absorption of nutrients. And if you have a big ass meal, 30 minutes, an hour, you know, before you go to sleep, it's going to be hard for your body to do multiple things at once. So that's why I love that 3 hours, you know, two might be pushing it, but 3, 4 hours and cutting it off. Like, I think that's a phenomenal recommendation and something that is practical for a lot of people unless they're in season and they have 7:30 or 8 p.m. games or whatnot. So, but yeah, the screen one, dude, I think all of these are important, but the screens, man, it's like, it's like you mentioned, the artificial blue light that our body is just not something that we've evolved to be able to handle yet. And not to mention the behaviors that we're doing on these screens are the other big issue too. Like, if you think about it, it's all very dopamine seeking behaviors. What are we doing on our phones? Scrolling social media, responding to Snapchats, looking at the news, fucking online shopping, looking at our work email, responding to texts, like all these things that are stimulating us before we go and we try and fall asleep for the night. It's just, it's not going to work. And I think an hour is a great recommendation for a lot of reasons. Having those blue light blocking glasses, high quality ones, could be helpful and productive for a lot of people, but we got to go straight to the source and see if we can minimize the exposure to these things. And you realize that, like, oh yeah, you know, me brushing my teeth, taking a shower, reading a book, maybe doing a meditation or some deep breathing and going to bed, I'm out like a light when I put my head on the pillow, versus somebody with horrible sleep latency and inability to get into these deep and REM sleep cycles, man. It's like your screen time right before bed is probably the thing messing up that more than anything else. So very well said. I can't agree with, you know, all of those more, but the sleep is the thing I want people to really hit home more than anything else we talk about today.
Luke, and even on that, one thing that you put in the notes that we might touch base on, but I hear all the time, is about TRT or HRT, hormone replacement therapy, or testosterone replacement therapy. And then we have shift workers, so people who work late night jobs. Once you get your sleep routine cleaned up, most people do not need hormone replacement therapy nor testosterone replacement therapy, because your body will go back to producing it. I don't know how many athletes, leaders I've worked with that, oh no, I thrive on 4 hours a night, I thrive on 5 hours a night. Once we get them to that magical seven, yeah, would I want them to sleep 9 hours? Absolutely. That'd be like the golden ticket for them. However, it's been shown that just getting 7 hours a night, just that bare minimum, is what you need to function. But so many people that I've worked with, no, 6, 4. And I'm like, look at your testosterone numbers. Let's get you 7 hours of sleep and see what happens in 3 months. And guess what? Their testosterone numbers go back to normal, if not better than they were before. Their body fat drops. Their muscle mass increases. And it's just wild how much we've neglected sleep as a society, thinking that that's the thing that's hurting us. And as you're mentioning, all these phones, all these things that were stimulating us, not only are we stimulated by those blue lights, our attention is being stolen, and our behavior is even worse. And I can say this because I went on YouTube with my son and he was watching just trains. The first one was a regular train, the second was a regular train, the third one was a train crashing. I'm like, what the heck? The algorithm wants us to be upset and it wants to keep our attention. And we are designed as humans to look at those things that keep our eye on it, right? It's the things that are going to be hurtful or dangerous, or oh my god, I can't believe Joe Schmo did this. So that's going to keep our brain firing at all times. And most of these companies, as you mentioned, online shopping, are trying to figure out how they can keep us on these devices longer, consuming more. And the only way they can do that is taking away our sleep. So if they take away our sleep, we're grouchy, and now we're trying to be an athlete, now we're trying to be a parent, now we're trying to be a leader, now we're trying to lose body fat, now we're trying to gain muscle mass. but you're getting less than 7 hours of sleep, it's not going to happen.
Totally, man. You know what's easier though is seeing the AG1 commercial on your screen from a Huberman podcast, and you take that.
Dude, I hate
That's,
those, man.
you know, or the Hims and Hers ads these
Oh.
days. And you bring up the TRT, and I think it's appropriate to talk about this right now because I think even in the athlete population that's been popularized, but especially in just general men's health, general women's health, one, I think it has to do with like the hyper optimization of blood work with these hormones and all of these things, because it's a very easy sales pitch. And a lot of people can identify with some of the quote unquote symptoms that people are arbitrarily listing out there that they can sell products on the back end. You know, whether they're reputable or not is a conversation for another day as well. But it's a very easy way to sell people on these things. And we've had a whole conversation for the last 30 minutes of these fundamentals, these big rocks, getting sleep, how to create a sleep schedule. Like all of that is a hell of a lot more difficult for some people than being like, oh yeah, doc says I need HRT or TRT and I'm going to start next week and that's going to solve all my problems. When in reality, it's the scratch of the surface. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen in my practice where somebody's sub 500, 600 testosterone, their free testosterone's normal, and their doctor starts them on TRT and they get up to 1,000, 1,100, 1,200, the high end of their, you know, of kind of that range that we see testosterone these days. And nothing fucking changed. Like literally nothing happened in response to that. And it's like, you didn't need it in the first place. And chances are we could have naturally increased that a little bit from the beginning by increasing our sleep and focusing on our macronutrients and getting enough calories and getting nutrient density and all of these things. And so, and as I sit here saying this, like, I think people can hear me and you talk about some of these things and how TRT isn't a primary form of prevention. And I know I speak for both of us probably here, but we're not saying that that's not a option for people. That's not something that can be an option and a valuable resource given the time and place and if that's appropriate for that person. Because I think when people hear us talk about these things and we say that's not the biggest priority, we think or they misinterpret that for saying you don't need that at all. And I'm a big advocate if somebody needs that, men and women, that could be a valuable resource for them. But I think what I really want to drive home here is the fact that those are not usually the things that we need to have a primary prevention or things to correct. Usually those things are improved alongside a lot of these other things that when we give time, attention to, and we actually prioritize these things that can make an influence on that, it's a hell of a lot cheaper and it's a little bit of an easier route sometimes when you start to appreciate all of the small things that really give us the biggest return on our investment. So we're not shitting on TRT or HRT. And again, talk to your doctor. That's not something that Tony and I prescribe at the end of the day either, but we have to acknowledge that whether or not you take some of those things or exogenous sources of hormones, the nutrition, the lifestyle, the sleep, the hydration, all of that shit does not change either. You do not get a green light pass to not do those things just because you started TRT and you weren't even doing those in the first place. What can we do alongside that or before that to just get you to a place where things can be managed on their own? So I just find that very fascinating. I've seen that time and time again. I don't even work with high-level athletes necessarily right now. I work with Gen Pop and you see that time and time again. It's just very interesting to me.
There's a strength coach I follow, and he's a close friend of mine, colleague, and he wrote the other day, and he's been doing this. Nothing changes if nothing changes. So you've now added TRT, but nothing else has changed. Guess what? Nothing changes if nothing changes. The TRT is not the magical pill that you've been looking for. It's not the silver bullet. And this could even lead into the conversation about GLP-1s, the Ozempics, the Wegovys. Like, yes, people have lost weight. I'm not going to deny that. That is not a denial. Most people are losing muscle, though. And if we talk about the muscle is the organ of longevity. You got 10 pounds down, but you've probably lost about 3 pounds of muscle, which no one wants to lose any muscle. So now you've lost muscle. Your testosterone's probably gone down, but you haven't changed what you've eaten. I've seen it time and time again. I had a very close family member who's on it, and they eat, this is their diet, chicken tenders and French fries. And guess what? Nothing changes if nothing changes. They took the Ozempic. Once they get off of it, guess what? The weight comes right back on. So unless you're someone who's going to be investing over $1,100 a month, $1,200 a month on one that is a reputable medical medication, then yes, go ahead and do it because you're going to need to do that for the rest of your life, right? And you have to do it the rest of your life. There is no on and off period. Like once you get off of it, you haven't figured out the solution because you're not hitting your protein numbers. You're not hitting fiber. You're not sleeping. You're not moving. You're not hydrated or dehydrating. You haven't had a healed relationship with food. You don't understand what else is going on, and you need more help than just this one injection that really is not what is helpful. If anything, it's more hurtful.
Totally.
And there are people that need it. Don't get me wrong. I do. People do need HRT. There are people that need TRT. There are people who need these GLP-1s. But the mass population that's being sold it, and they've been on the Hims and Hers, and it's only $300 a month. Well, that's a pharmaceutical brand, and they've done it where it's a compound, meaning they could put whatever they want in it plus the GLP-1 to make it cheaper. And I don't know what the other stuff is, and neither do you. And that's the dangerous thing. Like, we even talk about this with supplements, but with the, this kind of goes back to supplements where we don't know what's in a supplement. We didn't talk about third-party testing. So if you do decide to buy the sprinkles for your donuts, make sure it's third-party tested by NSF for Sport or Informed Choice, because those two things, look, what's on the bottle is what's in the bottle. And what's in the bottle has no banned substances. And I'll state just two really quick things is I've had two athletes. One was taking a sleep supplement. Well, he got sent it for free. And I was like, go get it tested. He got it tested. And it had methamphetamines in it. If you don't know what methamphetamines do, they keep you up. So he had a sleep supplement that kept him up. That's not what we want. And then I was talking to another one. They found cocaine in creatine. I don't know about you, but if I want cocaine, I'm going to buy it on itself, not in a creatine bottle. And two, if you're going to take creatine and I've popped positive for cocaine for a supplement you didn't even know had it, right? Because it wasn't third-party tested. And again, this messes your internal, going back to the GLP-1s and the TRT and the HRT, like all these things, you're not trying to find the solution. You're just finding a Band-Aid.
No question.
I'll shut up now. Get off the soapbox, right?
Like, we're doing an excellent job talking about multiple things at once. And I'm thinking about how I'm going to tie everything together, because I do want to talk about the supplements while I have you these last 10 minutes. But speaking a little bit more on the GLP-1, GIP medications, the TRT, again, the reputability of a lot of these companies is still unknown, and are more and more companies emerging, more and more providers jumping on these wagons and doing things outside the box, outside of a diagnosis, outside of seeing a prescribing physician, outside of sometimes people practicing in their area of expertise, unfortunately, because again, it's very lucrative. It's very easy to sell. And there are a lot of buzzwords that can, you know, attract men and women alike to come to these products and start to invest in these things, thinking that that's going to be the solution to it. And again, there's always a time and place, but more often than not, people are going to these one-off lab companies, or they're doing the men's health panel, and you have the free provider consultation afterwards to go over your results. And it doesn't matter what the results are for some of these people. They get on the call, and I've heard this story at least four or five times. And it's like Merrick Health, I'll throw them under the bus, because I've heard this two or three times from people there where it's like, hey man, you really should maybe consider start TRT. And this is kind of the logistics of it. And this is how much it would be a month. And this is why you should do it. And people are sitting there. It's like, I'm sitting here. I don't have ED. I'm not symptomatic. You know, I'm losing weight. I think this is trending up, and it's not even part of the conversation. And people are doing that with their Medi spas and their GLP-1 medications and getting shit under the counter and taking it temporarily. And there's so much opportunity for some of these things that it's dangerous. And especially in these worlds where other athletes, other corporate wellness people, other friend people, other family members are all maybe partaking in some of these things, it could be very appealing for a lot of people to want to jump ship on that. And again, you and I are sitting here making the argument that that's likely not necessary for your situation right now, assuming all of these other things aren't in check. And that's where we need to be directing most of our attention to. And the same shit happens with the supplement industry. It's literally the exact same blueprint. And I can't tell you, I know you've seen this too. I've seen multiple reports and articles and athletes where they sign an NIL deal with a supplement company and they get a drug test and they don't pass it because they're promoting this supplement company that isn't third-party testing. And it's very sad because it's not a very regulated industry and there's a lot of loopholes that people can go through. So long story short here, what I want to talk about and kind of wrap this up here is like, we have the basics. We have somebody sitting here. It's like, okay, sleep, great. Getting enough calories, great. Getting nutrient-dense foods, great. Not eating before bed, like trying to do all these things, all awesome. When do the supplements enter the conversation? Is it once we have all those things down, we kind of earn the right to talk about those things? We mentioned third-party testing. We can kind of summarize that again. We need to, but once we get to the sprinkle part, once we get to the fun part that a lot of people might think, What are some of the ergogenic aids? We can define that if you want to, because it's not exclusive just to supplements, for the people who've never heard that word before. But what are some things that we can start to think about adding to our routine once we have the nutrition, the diet, the hydration, everything else kind of at a good foundation here? What do we talk about and where does that conversation go from there?
Gun to head, there's a few supplements I always recommend or think of. If you're doing everything else right, fish oil, creatine, and then vitamin D, depending on what your blood levels show. Those would be like my top three hits. Yeah, protein powder fits in there, but if you can get whole foods, why not? So why fish oil, why creatine, and then why vitamin D, right? Because there's so many out there. Like personally, I love beta alanine. It's what gives you the tingly feelings. It helps you perform better. And actually going back a moment, ergogenic aid, something that will help you perform better, right? Yes, it has supplements. It also has ergogenic aids that are not legal. We stay away from those because that's how you get banned. So then like personally love beta alanine. It gives me the tingly feelings. I add that in my pre-workout. I love it. And it also helps me get that one more rep. We can talk about science on that, but just we'll keep it there for now. Caffeine, one of the most used and abused, as we spoke about moments ago, the half-life that you were mentioning, Luke, is absolutely correct. And how many people continue to use it and don't know why their sleep is poor. So I think that's why I have a big struggle with that. Caffeine is one of the best studies. And then the best study, creatine. One of my favorite, and more and more and more research is coming out on it, right? The minimum effective dosage is 5 grams of creatine a day, right? So you want to take 5 grams of creatine monohydrate. And I state that very loudly, creatine monohydrate. Why? There's many forms of creatine out there, like creatine HCL. There's one called creatine. Their big selling point is that it's absorbed faster than creatine monohydrate, which is absolutely true. It is absorbed faster, but it's also excreted faster. Your body doesn't get enough time to actually absorb it and utilize it. So you want to stay with the creatine monohydrate, 5 grams a day. People are like, well, do I need a loading phase? No. The only time I've given someone more than 5 grams of creatine is someone that's been off of it. So I had an Olympic swimmer. He was going to the Olympics and he hadn't taken creatine in a month, and he had an Olympic trial in about a week. So what we did is we dosed him for 20 grams a day for a full week, and he got his creatine stores back, right? So you want to take 5 grams a day, and we see it helps with muscles. It helps with brain health. Heck, for women listening to this, my wife has something called pregnancy brain. So when she was pregnant, she just forgets things. And it's almost like in a brain fog. When she started taking creatine, she noticed a difference, right? And women particularly, they've been told to stay away from it because we heard creatine, we think the big bodybuilder, like you're going to look bulky. I promise you, the only way you're going to look bulky is if you are to the T on 2 hours a day of working out, knowing exactly what you eat. It's very difficult for women to get bulky. And creatine is not going to help you get bulky. And then it's like, what about the weight? Isn't it going to make me gain weight? Water weight. Now let's go back to carbohydrate. Carbohydrate. This is why low carb diets, quote unquote, work for quick weight loss, because you lose water weight, carbohydrate. The same thing with creatine. It will attach water and go into your muscles. It'll actually make your muscles perform better because now they're hydrated and they have that first energy source, because creatine is an energy source that your body uses for any movement under 2 minutes. Now, I don't know about you, Luke. If I was to do a bench press that took longer than 2 minutes, people are going to look at me the wrong way because that's way too long to do one rep. No matter what sport you play, most movements are going to be less than 2 minutes. If you are a runner, your first use of energy is creatine. That first step is less than 2 minutes, I hope. If not, I don't know what kind of marathon you're running. You're running the Turtle Marathon. But anyways, creatine is that first use of energy. So you want to replenish it every single day. Now, the thing we said, supplements, they're the sprinkles. And I'm all about food first. And I know you are too, Luke. So where can we find creatine in food? Well, you can find it in red meat and in salmon. But you'd have to eat 2.5 pounds a day. Now, I don't know about you. I love salmon. I love red meat. That's a lot. That's a very expensive budget. So if you got enough to eat 2.5 pounds of either of those, good for you. Go for it. However, the supplement, that's where it kicks in. And it's been shown to help. Now, a most recent research came out that it's everyone is effective and it's safe for all ages. If you do want to use it, I always at the moment still hesitant on the research because there's only been one article that was published on this in children. I would say wait till puberty. And I still want to wait for full research and more on younger than that, but let puberty happen before we give them the creatine. Just again, it's just such new science, right? So we have creatine stores in our muscles and in our brains. And we use them every time we do physical activity. So creatine monohydrate, 5 grams a day. You want to take it. It doesn't matter what time you take it. Just take it every single day. All right. So that's creatine right there. If I didn't convince you to take creatine, I don't know what will, but I promise you it will help you feel better, fuel better, and get stronger, because you're going to be able to do more of those movements the next day. And it's a cognitive benefits. They've actually been showing it's going to help people that have early onset dementia. It's helping them with that. And if you're someone that's in a concussion sport, so I want you to think football, I want you to think baseball. I've had guys that I worked in baseball, a catcher, someone's bat went all the way around and hit him in the back of the head and he had a concussion. So even though you may not think it, concussion can happen at any time. It can help you rebound faster from that, right? The next one, fish oil. I absolutely love fish oil. It's been shown to help with body composition change. Also, we help with anti-inflammation, right? It's such a buzzword, but we want to make sure that you understand that anti-inflammation is just your body fighting things that may not be helping it at that moment, because we do want some inflammation. Most people think we always want to run away from it, but we don't. Inflammation is what helps grow muscles. So how much fish oil do we need? We need between 1 to 3 grams of DHA and EPA. And there's a whole laundry list we could talk about that, but you want to make sure you don't get that cheap buy one, get one free, because if you look at the EPA and DHA, it's typically very low, and you'd have to take about 20 of those pills to get an effective dosage. And finally, vitamin D, just get it tested. Once you get it tested, you can do your dosage from there, but always get it tested and make sure it's in a fat source, because it's one of the few fat soluble vitamins, which are A, D, E, and K, as you know, Luke, and I'm sure your listeners know as well. And the thing is, if it doesn't come in a fat source, you're not going to be able to absorb it. And we can go deeper in each one of these, but we got about 2 minutes and I want to be cognizant of everyone's time on this podcast. And I guess I went too long on creatine.
Your last recommendation on caffeine, basic, if someone's sitting here and they haven't taken caffeine, or maybe they are taking, what are some starting points, or what are some numbers to maybe keep in mind if they think, hey, maybe I am abusing it? Like, what would be a 1 minute spiel on that?
3 to 6 milligrams per kilo. So everything we do in nutrition is kilogram, because that's the way most of the research is done, because most of the world uses kilos. In the United States, we don't. So what you do is you take your body weight divided by 2.2. So for example, I weigh about 180 pounds, divide that by 2.2. That puts me at about 80, times that by 3, that's 240. That's my, you know, starting end. And some of these bangs, all these energy drinks start at 300 to 500. That's almost double what I need. So just be very cautious when it comes to caffeine. So 3 to 6 milligrams has been shown to be an effective dosage. Of course, start small and build up. You never want to start high, because then you can't really, you don't want to build that tolerance up.
Thank you for all that, bro. This was so fun. I have so many
thoughts. Thanks for having me, Luke.
Bookmark a part two, maybe a part three in the future. And we can go into some of the other, you know, nuances that come with these types of conversations. But I think this was a phenomenal episode. I know the people listening learned a lot. Tell people where they can find you, where they can inquire about coaching, get more resources, all that good stuff for you and your business.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Instagram at @coach_Tony Castillo, or go to my website, nutritionfp.com, and go right there to learn more about us and my team. So those are the two easiest ways to find us. And I appreciate your time. And thanks for having me on, Luke.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you too, bro. Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.